It's all about efficiency nowadays, isn't it? Ruthless efficiency. Sometimes brutal cutbacks and controls in the pursuit of efficiency. Across the board, streamlining, paring back. With God, it seems to be different. He seems less interested in efficiency than we might expect. You need only consider creation and its profligacy. I mean, how many wonderful animals and creatures do we really need? How many types of flower, bird or insect are required for a creation? How many undersea species are really necessary? An extravagant superabundance of everything, more than enough to go around, more than enough. Someone wrote, "How generous creation is, even to the point of wastefulness. Water pours without being gathered. Only a proportion of seeds produce fruit. Flowers bloom unseen and ungathered." Then his revelation to and through the people of Israel, how inefficient and time-consuming is that? He could hardly have chosen a more tiresome, demanding, frustratingly disobedient people. They see it, they don't see it, they get it, they don't get it. They're with them, they're off whoring with false gods. They trust, they complain. Why bother? Why not find someone more amenable, obedient, insightful? In the New Testament, the appalling inefficiencies continue to be writ large in the life, teaching and ministry of Jesus. Parables where 99 sheep are left in order to go hunting for one lost sheep. It makes no sense. It seems almost irresponsible. Illustrations where seeds are scattered in profusion and many, many are fruitless, though some do bear fruit. What's he telling us in all of this? The choices he makes are the people he wants to head up his church. The loser, the loudmouth, the harlots and the tax dodgers. The broken and the frail and the needy and the lost, the lepers and the children. These are the people he places at the centre of the way he does things. The way he wants his church to do things. And it makes no sense. Find the strong, the intellectual giants, the success stories, the achievers, the certainties. Build your church on them. Make sure you concentrate on the ones who will have winning ways, the good-looking, the powerful, the influential, the influencers. And let them be the leading lights of your church. This will bring success far more readily than ill-educated artisans and women and slaves. Cut back on the wastage. Leave the lost sheep. Focus your time and your attention on the 99 biddable ones who are smart enough not to get themselves lost. But from the start, it's avoid the king and welcome the shepherds. Spend your time not with the high and mighty of the land who might have done some good for your cause, but with the people no one else wants. Heal 10 lepers, though you know only one of them will come back and say thanks. Feed the multitude, though most of them won't have a clue what you're doing or who you are. Be prepared to say the unsayable when it would be more efficient to sweet-talk the Pharisees and schmooze with the Sadducees and keep your nose clean. Because if you annoy enough people, something bad is going to happen. And he encouraged his church to see things his way. To seek out the poor and the broken, the demanding and the feckless, and those who can't believe they are loved or that they matter, and tell them that they are loved and they do matter. Show them that. Show them that, in spite of what the world might say, they are loved and precious and unique in the eyes and the heart of God. He invites his church to spend its time and love profligately on those who need it, not those who will bring the best returns. To wash feet, not strut in the robes of rank and the trappings of power. In any form of ministry, we're happy to do that, to continue that inefficient ministry. Because we do spend hours with people who may never come to church, who may never really understand why we are there for them with unconditional love. People who may use us. We're not simply a gathered congregation of the like-minded, interested only in our personal salvation and our private spiritual journey. We are the inefficient church, prepared to exhaust ourselves by sharing the pain, responding to the needs, reaching out to people who are wounded and troubled. And we ask for nothing back. Expect no quid pro quo. And people smile at the folly of it. Why are you giving so much time to this family? They will never come to the church. There's nothing in this for you but to be taken advantage of. Why do you give stuff to people whose names you don't know and never will? Winter warm for the homeless, Christian aid funds, famine and disaster responses, projects in faraway places for people with strange sounding names. Why do you welcome everybody and anybody into the life of your church family and surround them with love, even if they are poor or troubled or difficult? Why not seek out the top people? Get them on board. The movers and the shakers. Then your message will take off. The pastoral role of the church makes no sense. We minister to people who need a minister, many of whom will simply take that help, move on, and give nothing back to the life of the church. But that's not important to us. What is important is that we serve the call of Jesus to show unconditional love to whoever needs it. For us, we scatter love to the winds. We sow seeds in profusion, some fall on stony ground, some bear fruit. But we do it with gospel inefficiency, seeking no returns, simply responding to need where we encounter it, with the love Christ puts in our hearts. Not calculating possible outcomes, just doing what we do, being the church we're called to be. Just doing what we do, being the church we're called to be.